What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. I'm recording this on Wednesday, October 16th, and we are just 6 days away from the start of the 2024-2025 NBA season, which is very exciting, which also means it is season preview time. For this episode, I'm going to be doing my contender tiers. I did one of these at sort of the midpoint of last season just to check in where teams were, but I'm going to do it preseason this time, and we can see how it evolves throughout the season. But I'm going to talk through all 30 teams, at least in some capacity. I'm obviously going to spend a little bit more time on the teams that are expected to be a little better. But with that said, let's go ahead and get right into it. So for these tiers, I've broken the 30 teams into 8 separate tiers. I also want to call out that this is not necessarily how I think that these teams are going to finish in the standings, but really just from a contention standpoint, where are they at going into the season? And so starting with the lowest tier, the 8th tier that I have, I call this one Have Tankathon.com Bookmark. So these are the bottom dwellers of the NBA, the teams that have little to no expectations to be even competitive this season. It would be really, I won't say a miracle, but it would be surprising if they even got themselves into the play-in discussion towards the end of the year. And in all honesty, odds are very high that they're going to be tanking towards the end of the year. They're going to be hoping to get Cooper Flagg or whoever ends up being the number one pick or consensus prospect in this upcoming draft. And in this tier, counting backwards from 30, we have the Brooklyn Nets, the Washington Wizards, the Portland Trailblazers, the Detroit Pistons, and the Utah Jazz. So starting out with the Brooklyn Nets, there's really not a ton to be excited about on this roster because this is year one of a rebuild, and year one of rebuilds tend to be not particularly fun because you haven't had your chance to take a top five pick quite yet. We saw the Wizards go through this last season and they were terrible. They didn't even win 20 games. But at least this year you can say, oh, we got Alex Saar. Hopefully he's good. The Nets don't have that yet. They're working with a hodgepodge roster of some veterans like Dennis Schroeder and Dorian Finney-Smith and Bojan Bogdanovic, some reclamation projects like Ben Simmons, Zaire Williams, and then some at least somewhat young, somewhat exciting players in Cam Thomas, Nick Claxton. You know, he's not exactly a super young guy at this point in his career, but De'Ron Sharp. They still have Cameron Johnson as well, but this is going to be probably a really rough season for them. I think that winning 25 games would be a successful year for them, which is a really low bar. Obviously, their over-under coming in the year is 18.5, which is one of the lowest I have ever seen. And if I had to bet money, I'd probably take the under. You know, I don't think the Nets are going to have much going on this season. They obviously traded Mikal Bridges in the offseason for a load of draft picks. And so I don't think they want to be good. I don't think they're going to be very good. And I think that at least the optimism of this year versus last year is that they've got a direction. Last year, I had a tier called directionless teams. They were firmly in that tier because they had no direction. They had no picks of their own, but they weren't going to be bad enough to bottom out, not going to be good enough to make the playoffs. But now they're at least resetting. They're heading in the right direction. They're going to get bad before they can get good. And so I think the Nets are probably going to be the worst team in the league this year. Washington might compete for that as well. But, you know, it's not going to be a fun year for the Nets. And so at the very least, you can say maybe we can turn Ben Simmons into somewhat of a valuable asset in his contract year this year if he can actually come back and play a little bit close to what he had in the past. And then Cam Thomas is maybe the other bright spot on the roster if you can see if he can turn into a guard of the future. But I'll be honest, I'm not a big Cam Thomas guy. He's a massive black hole offensively. And to me, he probably is going to find himself best fit for a sixth man type role in his career. Moving over to the aforementioned Washington Wizards, also not going to be very good. I mean, this is a team that just last season went only 15-67. They didn't really add anybody significant outside of drafting Alex Sarr, Malcolm Brogdon, who is, by the way, injured. So that would have been a nice veteran presence to replace Tyus Jones, who they lost in free agency, but he's going to be out to start the season as well. They did add Sadiq Bey as well, but he's been pretty injury prone and inconsistent with the shot throughout the years anyway. But, you know, they still got Jordan Poole, who was maybe the worst player in the NBA last season in terms of just high volume guys, at least. Maybe he can turn something around. Bilal Coulibaly did show some nice flashes last season. Kyle Kuzma kind of is what he is at this point. They signed Jonas Valanciunas, again, a guy who kind of is what he is. You wonder if maybe they signed him to be a trade chip for them down the line, which, you know, good move if they do that, because I think he could net them at least a couple second round picks, probably not a first round pick at this point. But regardless, he'll also give some stability and take some pressure off of Alex Sarr to be the starting center right away. Sarr has been starting at the power forward position next to Valanciunas, which I think is probably good for him to start his career. He's pretty frail at this point. I have mixed feelings on Sarr. I projected him as a role player coming out of the draft. He didn't look particularly good in summer league. He's looked better in preseason, which, you know, sometimes that's why you got to take summer league with a grain of salt, just because a lot of these players are really relying on the talent they have around them to showcase their talents, and Sard is might just be one of those guys. And so when he's playing with very just non-NBA players in summer league, it can be tough for them to get their footing. But, you know, when he's got more talent around him, if you want to call this more talent, obviously Washington's not super talented relative to the other teams, but at least he's got some NBA players around him. So I think having Valanciunas next to him is going to be beneficial for him, take some pressure off him as the main big on the floor, as I mentioned, especially defensively. And then they also drafted Bob Carrington, who looked pretty good in summer league as well. And then Keyshawn George out of Miami. We'll see if either of them can have an impact. I'm sure they're going to get a lot more playing time in the second half of the season. But again, I think this season for them, it's year two of the rebuild as opposed to Brooklyn's first year. So I think for this, you're still going to be bad. They're still probably not going to win 20-25 games. And they're going to have a top five pick again. It's going to take a couple years for these rebuilds to sort of pay dividends. But I think that this year, at least, you've got some pieces that you can start to say, hey, would like to see Bilal Coulibaly take on a little bit more responsibility on the offensive end, see if we can develop him there. You want to see Alex Sarr show flashes in his rookie season. Maybe Kyle Kuzma is used as a trade chip as well. And then see if you can just salvage anything out of Jordan Poole at this point in his career. But like the Nets, I think the Wizards, along with Brooklyn, are the two worst teams by far in the NBA this season, so not much to expect out of them, and I'd be genuinely shocked if they even came close to the play-in. Next, we have the Portland Trail Blazers. This was a team who finished 21-61 last year. They were last place in the Western Conference. And there's really not much reason to believe that they won't be last place again. And the West is absolutely brutal this year. Seems like we say that every year, but every following year seems like it's even more true than it was the year before. And there's really only going to be two teams not competing for the playoffs this season in the West, and Portland is one of them. And so I expect them to be a victim of a tough conference. I think that a lot of their players could get better and play better, and they could still lose the same amount, if not more, games just as a byproduct of the conference. But look, Scoot Henderson was very bad last year. He was talked about as probably the number two prospect after Wemby by most, even though Brandon Miller was selected before him. But Scoot really, really struggled last year. He was a turnover machine. He was insanely inefficient. He was a mess defensively. I mean, he really didn't do anything well. But I'm not selling my stock quite yet. We've seen a lot of point guards in the past put up really, really brutal first seasons. Just to name a few, De'Aaron Fox, Darius Garland. Go back and look at their stats. They're pretty ugly. But, of course, they have both turned into players that have made all-star teams. So I'm not going to write Scoot off totally. But we definitely need to see a significant jump from him in this second season. And they've got some good pieces. I mean, Anfernee Simons is one of the better high-volume three-point shooters in the entire league. I really like Denny Avdia as a player. I think he could be a very useful piece for any contender. He's been just stuck in Washington and now Portland, so we won't get to see that. But I really like his game. I think he's a good two-way player. He's got an improved jump shot. He's good feel for the game, good passer and connective piece offensively. Jeremy Grant is still there. You'd have to think he might get dealt at some point, but his stock is not super high at this point. I'm not sure teams value what he does because he's kind of doesn't play defense anymore, and he's not exactly the best or most efficient offensive player at this point in his career either. DeAndre Ayton, they still have him. He's a bit of a head case, but you know he can still put up a very easy 17 and 11 on a nightly basis. And then I still like Shaedon Sharpe a lot as a prospect. He was injured quite a bit last year. Timani Kamara gave him some nice flashes last season as a rookie second-round pick. Then they still have Robert Williams, who should be back healthy at some point this year. I think he's already banged up and going to miss the start of the season. No surprise there whatsoever. They'd be well-served to try to ship him out for whatever value they can get from him at this point. And then they did draft Donovan Clingan. So they're definitely crowded at the center position between Ayton, Robert Williams, and Clingan. I think Clingan is the guy they view as the center of the future. Williams is just too injury prone to even see him out there on the court. I'm sure he might get dealt soon. And then Ayton, only 2 years left on his deal. Wouldn't be surprised if they shopped him a little bit as well. But again, Portland, I think, is going to be quite bad. I don't really see a path to them even making any noise in the Western Conference because somebody's got to be a bottom feeder in the West, and they are by far the worst team. Then up next, we got the Detroit Pistons, who, you know, had some talent going into last year, but boy, were they just atrocious. I mean, they only went 14-68. They were the worst team in the NBA record-wise. They broke the NBA record for most consecutive losses with, I believe it was a 30-plus at one point. And they shouldn't have been that bad. I mean, Monty Williams was not doing them any favors. They fired him and have since hired J.B. Bickerstaff from Cleveland. Hopefully he can be a little bit more of a culture setter and also just have some better rotations. I mean, there were some very questionable lineup decisions out of Monty last year with Jaden Ivey getting buried on the bench in favor of guys like Killian Hayes. And so I think for this season for Detroit, you'd like to see them at least be frisky. Because last year, like, I think that's what you were hoping, and they weren't even close to that. I'm not expecting them to make the play-in. I think that if they could even just flirt with the play-in for part of the season, that would be a success for this season. But most importantly, this season is a big kind of check-in point for Cade Cunningham. Because, look, he's put up some good counting stats to this point. I mean, he averaged just under 23 points a game last year, 7.5 assists, over 4 rebounds. And his efficiency was a little bit better. But overall, he's been a wildly inefficient player to this point in his career. He's even in his best season last season, he was true shooting percentage below 55. The league average is around 58%, so well below that. One of the lowest among high-volume guys in the whole league. The advanced stats still say he was a significantly negative player offensively. His offensive rating was almost 10 points lower than the league average. Couldn't even accumulate a single offensive win share last season. So, you know, I'd like to see a little bit more out of Cade. I know people still believe in him as a franchise type guy. He's still only 23 years old, but I'd like to see a little bit more out of him, if I'm being totally honest with you. I was a little disappointed with his play the past couple seasons just because I was very high on him coming out of college, and I think that he's been very inefficient. I think his jump shot has been inconsistent, and I don't think he's just been that good offensively despite the counting stats. But someone's got to score on this team, and so they also added Tobias Harris. I mean, I he is what he is, but he'll help this team just because they need anybody who can go out there and just put together a consistent 15 points a night. I like Jalen Duren as a center. He's still very young and averaged a double-double last season. I think Marcus Sasser showed some flashes last year. Oser Thompson was a really good defensive player for them for stretches last year. Ron Holland, I'm very high on as a prospect. A little bit of a surprise for him to go in the top five this past season, but I'm a fan. And I think he could have an impact on the team, especially on the defensive end. And then Jaden Ivey, you know, it's a big season for him. He, as I mentioned, he got buried on the bench a little bit last year, but should get ample opportunity this year to kind of emerge as that second scorer next to Cade. So Pistons, not going to be very good. Could I see him getting to 30 wins? Possibly, but not going to be anywhere near the playoff picture, in my opinion. And then the last team for this tier, I have the Utah Jazz. And I know that they've actually been pretty decent over the past two seasons. Both years, they got up to good starts. I think they were like 10-2 2 years ago. came out really hot out of the gates before falling off a little bit. And they did finish that season with still 37 wins. And then last year, they were around 500 at the midway point and then fell apart again at the end. Still ended up with 31 wins. So they've been 30-plus wins the past two seasons. With that said, I don't see them doing that again, just for a lot of the reasons I mentioned with Portland. Like, somebody's got to be bad in the West. And like, Utah is just, they're deprived of talent compared to the other teams. They've got some young, interesting pieces. They obviously locked up Lauri Markkanen, who's a very, very solid player at this point. And then Keontae George showed a ton of flashes as a rookie. Colin Sexton has, you know, been a pretty solid combo guard over the years between Cleveland and Utah as a scorer. And then Taylor Hendricks is going to be slotted into the starting lineup this year in favor of John Collins. They also drafted Isaiah Collier, Cody Williams, Kyle Filipowski. They still have Jordan Clarkson off the bench. Walker Kessler was in trade rumors this year. So they've got some guys, but I'm not moved by their roster at all. I think their veterans are losing value by sitting on the team, most notably Clarkson and John Collins. I don't think they have any young guys that are like ready to break out to be a 20-point per game scorer this season, which is what you'd hope when you're going to be rebuilding for going into year three of rebuilding, honestly. But part of that is because they've been too good to get a top pick. So, but I think this is the year that they kind of fall back a little bit. I think that they're going to be sub 30 wins this season. They're over under 27.5. I could see them being under that as well, just because, again, wins are going to be tough to come by in the Western Conference. Would I be surprised if Utah is around 500, flirting with the play-in again midway through the season before falling off? Probably not. But to me, that's silly. I think that they should try to bottom out. I don't know why they're so hell-bent on trying to compete early. I know Will Hardy is a really good coach, and so probably, unfortunately for Utah, he's just going to squeeze a couple extra wins out of you that, you know, maybe they don't want. But I think they'd be smart to totally bottom out. Try to go for a Cooper Flagg or something like that, just because, look, this roster still seriously lacks star power for a team that's trying to rebuild. Obviously, Markkanen is a really good player, but he's never going to be a number one option on a contender. And by the time that they might even be a contender, he might be at, like, entering the back end of his prime where he's not as good as he is at this point. So I think Utah is going to be near the bottom of the West, and I think they would be smart to not try to win this season. Then the next tier we have, the seventh tier on my contender tiers, is one I call geographical beneficiaries. And what I mean by that is that there are eight teams in the Eastern Conference that I think most people believe will be the top eight teams and make the playoffs. But with the new NBA format with the play-in, somebody's got to make the play-in in the East. They just do. There's going to be 10 teams. And so two of those teams are very likely to come from this group. If any of these teams were in the West, I think they would probably be among the bottom feeders of the conference. But just because the way the conferences are right now, that the West is much deeper, the middle of the conference is significantly better. And so in the East, there's going to be two teams that have to make the play-in. And so in this tier, I have the Toronto Raptors, the Chicago Bulls, the Charlotte Hornets, and the Atlanta Hawks. I'm more of a believer in some of these teams compared to the other ones, but obviously you can't rule out any of them for being the 9 or 10 seed, just because, as I said, somebody has to do it. But starting with the Raptors, they have a weird roster to me, because they tried to kind of thread the needle between rebuilding and continuing to be decent, because they traded Anunoby, and instead of getting picks or something back, they got RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley, two players that are, still in their mid-20s, but not super young. They kind of are what they are at this point. They might get better. I'm not going to say they won't, but are either of those guys turning into all-stars? I think it's pretty safe to say not likely at this point. And then in the Siakam trade, they got Bruce Brown, who's, again, a nice veteran player, and then some picks. But they don't really have any exciting young prospects that I'm particularly high on. Of course, Scotty Barnes, I'm kind of considering him graduated from being a prospect. I think he is extremely good. He had a really good season this past year. He posted career highs in points, rebounds, assists. His field goal percentage and efficiency overall went up from where it had been the past year in what was kind of considered by a lot of people a little bit of a sophomore slump after a really good rookie season. But his three-point shooting went up as well. He was just better across the board. He made his first All-Star team as well. And I really like Scotty Barnes, but I'm not sure he's ever going to be sort of like that number one option on a contender. He strikes me as more of like a superstar level role player. And I don't mean that as a knock. I just mean more of like a secondary, tertiary option. Like, gives me a little bit of like a prime Sean Marion type vibes as a player, which is, I mean, he made all NBA teams and was a top 2 to 3 scoring option on some years on teams that were legitimately contending. And I think Scotty Barnes could get there, but I don't know if he's the number one or if he's ever going to get to that point, just because I don't really trust the jump shot. And his shot creation is, he's got some, but you know, it's not at that elite level. You need to be a number one, but this team's interesting. I mean, between Barrett, Barnes, Quickly, they still have Jakob Poeltl. They've got some interesting pieces off the bench. I don't know if Grady Dick is going to start or Bruce Brown, but then they also added Davion Mitchell. They drafted Jacoby Walter. They still have Agbaji from Utah. I like Jonathan Mogbo as a prospect, their second round pick this year. Still have Kelly Olynyk. They've kind of made some weird in between moves again. Trading from Kelly Olynyk last year is a perfect example as well. So I don't really know what they're trying to do. They've been pretty open at their media day that they are rebuilding, but their roster doesn't scream rebuild, because you've still got guys like Olynyk and Poeltl that are clear win-now guys. Bruce Brown, guys that they easily could have traded last year, but they didn't. And in Olynyk's case, they actually traded for him. So their front office moves continue to confuse me a little bit, even though they did finally sell off some pieces in Anunoby and Siakam. But, you know, they've got enough talent to be the 9 or 10 seed, certainly. I mean, Barrett's been a 20-point-per-game guy. Scotty Barnes, as I mentioned, made an all-star team. He will only continue to ascend. I do really like him as a player. Quickly, you know, he could easily average 18-7 this season and be a solid offensive option at the point guard position. If Grady Dick can finally start to knock down some shots from outside, Bruce Brown's a good winning player. And so they do have some pieces that are going to help them win some games. But I still am not super high on them. I think they have just a kind of one of the weirder rosters in the NBA. I don't love all the fits, a little clunky. Barrett's not a great shooter. Barnes is not a great shooter. Poeltl is a total non-shooter. Quickly, I still think, for as good as he's looked in some of the minutes where he's been the full-time starter, I still kind of like him more as a sixth man type guy. I thought the contract they gave him was kind of just wild, in my opinion. Felt like a way overpay. I'm not sure who on the open market is giving Emmanuel Quickly that much money. But regardless, they'll be in the mix for the 10-9 seed or whatever, just because someone has to be in the East. Then moving to the Chicago Bulls, they finally moved on from DeMar DeRozan. Just classic them. Holding on to the asset until it was a free agent and basically losing him for nothing. I know it was technically sign a trade. They got Chris Duarte, but you know, certainly not the return they could have gotten if they traded him earlier. Another team that just continues to scratch heads a little bit with their front office moves. But they did trade Caruso for Josh Giddey. That was the big move in the offseason. I've been one of the only people that has said that I think this was a huge win for Chicago. I think it's a win for Oklahoma City too, but I'm more just saying Chicago kind of got destroyed in the media for not getting a pick back. But, you know, Giddey is damn good still, in my opinion. He's not fit to be the swing guy, the stand in the corner three-point shooter on a contender right now. That's just not a role he should be in, obviously, because he struggles from outside. But if you can get him in a situation like he's in now, where he can have the ball a little more, run the offense, he's a phenomenal playmaker for his size and position. He's a very crafty finisher and scorer. He's a pretty good rebounder for his size as well. I mean, he literally just turned 22 like last week. So it's insane how young this guy still is. For people to be so high on him early in his career and just completely write him off after one bad playoff series at the age of 21, kind of ridiculous to me. This is a guy who literally averaged 17, 8, and 6 at age 20 on a team that won 40 games a year ago for Oklahoma City. Like, to me, this was absolutely a flyer worth taking. And look, Caruso's getting kind of old. And so I get the whole, like, they could have maybe gotten a pick in it or with the leverage they had. But regardless, I think Giddey's a phenomenal buy low candidate, and I think he's going to have a really nice year for them, especially because he's going to be with a guy in Coby White, who is, in my opinion, should have won most improved player last year, but he's not really a true point guard. So it's kind of a great fit in terms of he can play more of an off ball role while Giddey has more of the ball handling duties. Zach LaVine's coming back too. No idea what we're going to get at him. Obviously, he was pretty terrible last year, bad locker room guy from what we've heard. I'm sure they're really just trying to build up his value so they can try to hopefully trade him, but that contract is really brutal. They still have Vucevic, who could eventually be a trade candidate as well. Lonzo Ball making his debut in basketball today, apparently. That is what the rumors are saying. Who knows what we're going to get out of him? I mean, he could be a total shell of himself. He could be right back to where he was. But we'll just see. You never know. They also drafted Bouzelis in the first round. I thought I wasn't super, super high on him, but he's kind of a boomer bust prospect, and they got him a pretty good value. He fell in the lottery to in the teens where the Bulls were able to scoop him up. So I think it's good value for him them there. I think he has at least the tools to be a star player in the league, but we'll see if he can put it together. Then they still have Ayu Dosunmu, who I like a lot. Patrick Williams, who still crazy young. I know people, he hasn't necessarily popped off the screen yet, but they have some guys, some pieces. I kind of like their talent. I like their roster at least makes a little bit more sense to me than Toronto's because, one, they're younger outside of LaVine and Vucevic. They've got some guys that I like a lot among their young guys between Dosunmu, Giddey, Coby White had a great season. Bouzelis is at least interesting. And so could they be in the 9-10 seed range? Absolutely. Would they be a bottom feeder in the West? Probably. But, you know, they've got enough talent, especially if LaVine can bounce back. Then suddenly between him, Giddey, Coby White, and Vucevic, they've got four pretty high-level guys on the offensive end of the court that could lead them to, again, a play-in appearance, but probably nothing more. Next, we have the Charlotte Hornets, who I'm actually pretty bullish on this year. I could see them winning close to 40 games. Among the teams in this group, I think Atlanta and them are clear-cut ahead of Chicago and Toronto. I've always been a LaMelo Ball guy. I still think he is really good. It's crazy that he's still only 23. It's easy to forget that at age 20, the guy averaged 20 points, 8 assists, 7 rebounds, and made an all-star team. And they were in the plan for both of his rookie and his sophomore season. They did not perform well when they got there, but still, I mean, he was the leading scorer, best player on two play-in teams in the past. And so the past 2 years, he's just been totally injured. He played 36 games in 2023, only 22 last year. And to me, that's why the Hornets have been so bad, is mostly just because of the injury to LaMelo over the past few years. And when he's played, they've been pretty good. I mean, and so I expect a lot of the same, especially considering Brandon Miller had a really good rookie season. He was much better than most expected, myself included. I pegged him as a bust coming out of the draft, but I think it's pretty safe to say at this point that that's probably not going to be the case. He's looked really good in preseason as well. I think Brandon Miller could be poised to break out a little bit with a 20-plus point per game season as well. So they might have two 20-point per game scorers on top of Miles Bridges, who has averaged 20 in the past as well. So they've got three guys that can drop 20 on any given night. I still really like Mark Williams as a rim-running center. He's got really good touch, and I think I wouldn't be surprised if he eventually was a floor-spacing big as well to go along with his really good shot-blocking. They've got some decent pieces off the bench. Trey Mann played really well for them in the second half as well. They added Josh Green from Dallas, who's a nice role player. Grant Williams played better for them than he had with Dallas last year. They drafted Tijan Salon in the first round in the top, I think he was sixth overall out of France. I wasn't super high on him, but he's looked pretty good in preseason. We'll see if he can give them anything. And then Nick Richards is one of the better backup bigs in the league as well. So I kind of like their team. I like the young guys they have. I like the veterans they have. It's a good mix. And so to me, if LaMelo can stay healthy and Brandon Miller takes a little bit of a leap, I think this team absolutely will make the play-in. They're my pick to be in the play-in among this group. And of course, once you get there, who knows what can happen. Hopefully not complete blowouts like the last two times they got it. But but I am high in Charlotte. I do like them this year. They're kind of like my bad team that I'm the highest on. Don't expect them to make the postseason, but I could see them flirting with 40 wins this year. And then the last team in this tier, we have the Atlanta Hawks, who a lot of people were high on last year as kind of the year two with Quinn Snyder, year two with DeJounte Murray and Trae Young pairing. But they were severely disappointing. They went only 36-46. A lot of that had to do with the fact that Trae Young missed a lot of time. They were banged up across the board. But to be honest, the main thing is that Murray and Trae Young just, it was a bad fit. I mean, let's just call it like it is. I was not high in that deal. You can go back and listen to my reaction podcast to that one. I thought it was going to be a clunky fit. Two guys that need the ball in their hands. Two guys that don't really like to play off ball. Murray, a guy who hasn't particularly been a great spot-up shooter. Trae Young, who hasn't really shown a willingness to play off ball or just really how to maximize his own value in that role. But DeJounte Murray is no longer on the team. They shipped him off for Dyson Daniels and Larry Nance, as well as a draft pick. And to me, that is a addition by subtraction. I don't mean that to say that Murray's a negative player, but for this team, it wasn't the fit that they needed. And so I think him no longer being on the team, plus Dyson Daniels being in his spot, is a huge upgrade for them. I am very high on Dyson Daniels. I really like him as a player. I've liked him since he came out of the draft playing over in Australia. And I always kind of thought he should get more playing time in New Orleans. I know they kind of had too many guys. And of course, look, his stats they're not going to pop off the screen. 6 points a game, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. Not a great shooter, 31% for his career from deep. But I think he's going to have a really nice breakout year. He is 6'8". He's a phenomenal defensive player, which is the exact kind of skill set you need next to Trae Young in the backcourt. I think the three-point shot has been good enough where if he can just make 33, 34%, he'll be able to stay on the floor. And I think he's shown enough flashes there where that's a realistic scenario. He's also a really underrated passer and playmaker. That's one of his better skills, especially for a guy at 6'8". And so Dyson Daniels is on my list of guys that could have a really big breakout season this year. I think he could be in the running for most improved player. I really like him as a player in general, but especially on the Hawks team. And I think him being in for Murray, again, is a net positive for the team. And it's just the icing on the cake when you consider they also got a draft pick. And Larry Nance, who's a really useful player. They still have Clint Capella and Okongwu, which is one of the better center duos across the NBA. Bogdanovich is still an annual sixth man of the year candidate. They have Jalen Johnson, who was spectacular last season. I mean, if he had played enough games, then I think he would have had a really compelling case for most improved player last season. I mean, he jumped from 6 points a game all the way up to 16, from 4 rebounds to 9. From 1.2 assists to 3.6, his three-point percentage jumped all the way from 29% to 36%, which was really the biggest question mark with him was, can he make three-pointers consistently? But he's proven to be a really nice connective piece offensively, an underrated playmaker for his size, a good rebounder, a beast in transition. He's a really good athlete. And if he stays healthy this season as well, then I think he can be a super reliable second option next to Trae Young. He also showed some really nice defensive flashes as well. So they still have DeAndre Hunter as well. They drafted Zach Richechet in the first round, who I've been documented saying I'm not a huge fan of. But he looks pretty good in preseason so far. You know, I'm not going to write him off as a bust yet. Obviously, I think he might end up being one, but who knows? Maybe he'll be a really good 3-and-D player for this team, and if he is, then that's going to be huge for them. They also have Kobe Bufkin, who they drafted the year before out of Michigan, and he was in the G League for a lot of last year, but I think he's going to get an opportunity to have an impact on this team too. So I kind of like the Hawks. I don't know why. I feel like I always have a soft spot for them. I'm a Trae Young believer and defender in general. But I like their center rotation. I love the fit with Daniels over the Murray fit from previous years. I think they've got some good shooting in Bogdanovich and Risa Shea and DeAndre Hunter. They've got unique skill sets in Larry Nance and Jalen Johnson that can play multiple positions, guard multiple positions. Good guys that are connective pieces offensively. So I don't know. I like the Hawks. I could see them sneaking into not only the play-in, but the playoffs. And I might even pick them there. I might have them as the 8th seed this year. I just think that they're going to be a little bit better than most people expect. But again, they are still a geographical beneficiary because in the Western Conference, I don't think they would really have a shot at the postseason. But they're kind of a sleeper team for me. I think that they could maybe get into the postseason. I like what they did this offseason. So next, we have the tier called I Might Regret This because I might regret putting these teams this low. They have super young star power. And one of these years, these two teams are going to break out into the postseason. It's just a matter of if, when, not if. And it could be this season. It could be next year. It could be the year after. Who knows? Both of them loaded with talent in different ways. But this tier is the San Antonio Spurs and the Houston Rockets. With the Spurs, look, I don't love their roster, but if you got Victor Wembanyama on your team, then it's only a matter of time before you break out. And so this could look silly. He could burst onto the scene as a top 10, even top 5 player as soon as this season. And if he is that good, then they're going to win games. They're going to win some games. Their roster is still not great, but it's better than it was last year. They finally have a legitimate point guard next to him in Chris Paul, and really is kind of the perfect point guard because he's not going to demand any shots whatsoever. He's going to get Wembanyama his shots right next to the basket. He's going to run a beautiful pick and roll. He's going to take pressure off him to shot create. He's going to just get him easy looks, throw him an entry pass, like things that they just could not do last season. Trey was the only even like semi-reliable shot creator for others or playmaker that this team had last year. Jeremy Sochan at the point guard position was a disaster. I said that from the beginning, that was never going to work, and it didn't work. It was I have no idea why they did that. It might have been a silent tanking mechanism for all we know. But between Chris Paul, Wemby, I still like Devin Vassell a lot. I think he can be a really nice secondary, tertiary scoring option. They added Harrison Barnes, who very not sexy, but, you know, it's an adult in the room, a guy who can shoot threes in the corner, a guy who can play some defense, a guy who doesn't demand looks, but is going to at least fit and know his role. Sochan is still there. Obviously, I think he's going to benefit playing in his now more natural position as a forward. And then on the bench, they still have Zach Collins, who showed some flashes last year. Keldon Johnson, who I'm not the biggest fan of, but, you know, he has averaged 20 points per game in a season before. And I think he's finally in a role that's probably a little bit better suited for him as more of a bench complementary role player. So it'll be interesting to see if he can kind of lean into that role, because I think he could be really good at it if he locks in defensively and does more of the little things rather than just chasing his shot. But they also drafted Stephon Castle, who's supposed to be a very good defensive player and a guy who can do a little bit with the ball as a playmaker. More of an off guard, in my opinion, but they don't need him to be the lead guard because they have Chris Paul now. And what better player to learn from than Chris Paul? So, look, the Spurs roster outside of Wembanyama, pretty bad, underwhelming, not great. They'd probably be in the previous tier if Wemby was even half the prospect that he is. But this is simply a bet on Wembanyama. This is a just me having a level of respect for him where I can't in good conscience put him in the lowest tier. And it's, again, it is only a matter of time before he is averaging 30, 15, 7, and 4, you know. And at that point, I mean, he's already maybe the best defensive player in the league. But when his offense catches up to him from an efficiency standpoint and just a maturity standpoint, then they're going to be good. They're going to be good. We've seen that great players, transcendent generational players in the past, can take bad rosters and win games with them. They can't win championships necessarily, but they can win regular season games. And so, again, I might regret putting the Spurs this low, but for right now, the West is so stacked. I think it would be tough for them to make the playoffs. Could they flirt with the play-in? Yes. If they made the play-in, would I be surprised? No. But I still think they're probably one transaction cycle away from being legitimate postseason contenders, just because I just think they need to add a little bit more talent next to him, especially from a scoring perspective. And then the other team I have in this tier is the Houston Rockets. They've been kind of a trendy pick in the preseason here in terms of a team that could potentially make their way into the postseason. And would I be shocked if they did? Absolutely not. Because this team is loaded with talent. I mean, if you're talking just best 1 through 13 or 14, they might have the best roster in the NBA in terms of just pure depth. Because you go down this roster and there are a lot of guys that could get significant minutes on really good teams right now. They're running back the same starting five as last year with Fred VanVleet, Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, Jabari Smith Jr., and Alperen Şengün. And VanVleet and Brooks got a lot of heat, or the Rockets got a lot of heat for signing them to such big salary numbers, but they were hugely impactful on this team last year. I mean, just getting adults in the room, they had zero veteran presence the past couple of years before that. So having those guys there, especially VanVleet, was immensely valuable for just like making them like a serious team, not a team that's just your turn, my turn on offense, not giving a shit on defense. And, you know, they became a really solid defensive team. A lot of that has to do with Ime Udoka as well and his system and his ability to hold the players accountable. But regardless, the adults in the room certainly help. I'm as big of a Şengün fan as you're going to find. I've been on him for a while. I think he is. It's only a matter of time before this guy's like a top 20 player. He's still only 22 years old and was putting up 21-9-5 on good efficiency. And it's not even just the counting stats. It's that the role this guy plays in the team. I mean, he is the offensive hub. He's the orchestrator for everything they do offensively. They run everything through him. He's a spectacular playmaker and passer for his size, and especially for a guy his size at his age. I mean, he's just the natural instinct offensively this guy has is not something that comes around super frequently. And he's a big body. He's a good rebounder. He's a crafty finisher and shot maker. He's good in the post. Like, Şengün is just awesome to me. He's sort of like the poor man's Sabonis, and Sabonis is the poor man's Jokic, is kind of how I look at it. But, you know, it's legitimately Şengün could be better than Sabonis in the next year or two. Like, that's not even a crazy thought at all. So I think it's only a matter of time before he's a legitimate star player. And the rumors that he was going to be dealt this offseason was just, I can't even fathom the idea that they would do that. And then on the bench, they have Steven Adams, which a lot of people didn't even realize because that was a midseason trade last year with Memphis as sort of a salary dump to get below the tax. But he's back, and he's a useful player for sure. I think him with Şengün is a really nice balance as a 1-2 punch at the center position. They still have Jock Landale there as well. Then you've got Tari Eason, who's been a really nice two-way player for them at this point. He's still super young. Cam Whitmore has shown a ton of flashes as a offensive player. Still a little bit of a black hole, not the best vision or passer at this point, but a efficient scorer, a really good shooter, and a guy that if he can just see the court a little bit better could turn into legitimately a really high level starter and a 20 point per game guy at some point. Then they still have Jay Shante, Jeff Green, Amen Thompson had some really good flashes, especially late in the season when they were playing him at the four. And then, of course, my other guy that I am in love with, Reed Shepherd. Can't get enough of this player. He is, I think he's going to be so good. I think he's going to be really good. I think he's going to be an all-star player. I think that Houston, between the combination of Shepherd, Şengün, I really like Jabari Smith as a longer-term high-level role player as well. Like, they are set up to be really good for a long time. The only thing with them, with me, is Jalen Green. I'm not a Jalen Green guy. I know that he played really well down the stretch last year, but I still just think he is a little too inefficient, a little too tunnel vision-y offensively, takes bad shots, still doesn't try hard enough on defense for my liking, and he's just a little too inconsistent. I know that he is still young, but I haven't seen, like, I guess it's a little unfair. I'm going to say, like, I haven't seen the flashes, and he obviously showed great flashes towards the end of last season, but I don't know. I just want to see a little bit more efficiency. He's never shot better than 42% from the field. He's never even shot better than 34% from three. Like, he hasn't the one thing he's supposed to be good at is shooting and scoring, and he still hasn't been very good at those aspects of the game. So I kind of think the reason I put Houston in this tier and not higher, and I might regret it, as the name of the tier said, is because Jalen Green. I think if they had trade, there was rumors of him being traded for like Mikal Bridges or something like that. If a trade like that happened, then I think I might even have this team in the postseason. But I can't buy into a team whose go-to scorer is Jalen Green until I see him get a little bit more efficient, get a little more bought into what they want to do, or until they ship him out for an upgrade on the team, which could happen in the near future. And I could very well be wrong. They could be so talented that it doesn't even matter. But this team's going to be really good in the near future. I think the Shepherd, Şengün, Jabari Smith, with all the other young talent and players that could turn into, at the very worst, really high level role players, is just a really nice core. I love Ime Udoka as a coach. I think he is one of the probably five best coaches in the league, and I think he's going to get the most out of them. And so I do have them not in the postseason and not in the play-in right now, just because of how ridiculous the West is. But as I said with this tier, I might regret it. And there's a good chance that at least one of these teams makes me regret it. But at least I am aware that that's a possibility. I'm calling it out up front. So won't get exposed for any bad takes later on. And the next tier we have is called Further Than You Think. And it's because these teams are further away from contending than you think. And all of them have had varying degrees of contention over the past few years. A couple of them have made finals appearances over the past few years. But ultimately, the league has caught up to them, and they just really cannot and should not be taken seriously as anything more than fringe playoff contenders, teams that could make the playoffs, and some of them very well may. But once they get there, they don't have a shot. And for most of these teams, I actually don't even think that they're going to make the playoffs. And for this group, we have the Los Angeles Clippers, the Golden State Warriors, the Miami Heat, and the Sacramento Kings. So I will start off with the Clippers. And if there was a team in the league right now that I would least want to be as a franchise, it is undoubtedly the Los Angeles Clippers, because I just don't think that they're going to be good enough to even sniff the playoffs, and they don't have anything to fall back on. Their pick is owed via a swap to Oklahoma City this year, then they owe it unprotected to Oklahoma City the following year, then the year after that they owe their pick as well. And so they can't be bad, and because if they're bad, they're not going to reap any of the benefits. They're going to hand over a lottery pick to a team that's in the postseason already. And I am really worried that the lottery is exactly where this team's going to be, because they lost Paul George for nothing. And Paul George is still really, really good, a really good player, a top 25 guy, a guy who is still a really good two-way player. I mean, he competes defensively. He's long. He's athletic. He's a very reliable outside shooter. He can create for you. He did a lot of playmaking for the Clippers because they just didn't have a lead guard that really could do that before Harden got there. I mean, he's kind of like a Swiss Army knife. He does it all. And he was kind of the glue that held the Clippers together, in my opinion. And so with him gone, it is looking bleak for them, because Kawhi Leonard, as we know, probably the most injury-prone star of the last five seasons, and he's already hurt. He's hasn't played in preseason. He doesn't have a timetable to return. They haven't announced anything. And the more ambiguous these injury things get with Kawhi, the worse they typically end up being. And so I have no expectations for him to play on opening night. I have no expectations for him to play anytime soon. And I could be wrong. But even if he does play, like, do we believe that he's going to be consistently healthy all year long? And at the very least, do we believe he's going to be healthy come playoff time? Because four consecutive playoffs, he has either missed the playoffs entirely or gotten hurt in the playoffs and missed the remainder of them. So I'm sorry, I'm not going to be fooled a fifth time in a row. Not that I've been fooled. I mean, it's pretty obvious what's going to happen for this team. But the point is, he's so unreliable. Then they lost Paul George, who also hasn't been super reliable health-wise, but like, because of how unreliable Kawhi's been, it almost makes him feel like he has been super reliable for them. So basically, this team could end up looking like James Harden and a bunch of role players, which, hey, you're talking 2018, that is a winning formula. But in the year 2024, 2025, I'm not seeing it. I think Harden's still really good. I do. I think I'm higher on Harden than most people around the league at this point. I still think he is immensely valuable as a playmaker and can run an offense as well as anybody in the league. Force feed big men down low, find open shooters, run the pick and roll, whatever he needs to do, he can do. But he's not a go-to guy anymore offensively as a scorer. And so if Kawhi is not going to be fully healthy, that leaves Terrence Mann, Derek Jones Jr., Norman Powell, Nick Batum, Amir Coffey, Chris Dunn, Bones Highland, Mo Bamba, Zubac, like some good role players, but like none that are even in the remote discussion for a reliable scoring option. Norman Powell's probably the closest thing, but even he's more of a spark plug. I mean, there's a reason they've had him as their sixth man over the past few years. I'm not a believer in Derek Jones Jr.'s shot translating consistently year over year, so don't hate the addition from a defensive perspective, but between him and Terrence Mann and Amir Coffey, Nick Batum, a lot of guys that can't do much with the ball in their hands, that aren't always super reliable outside shooters, that are just, you want them as their fifth guy out there on the court, but they're going to be asked to be the second, third, or fourth guy on the court, and so it's going to be tough for them. I just think that they're an old roster. They don't really have the defensive personnel to be a top 10 defense. Now they don't really have the personnel to be a top 10 offense either. And so I don't know what their calling card's going to be. And I'm worried for them genuinely, because I think this could be an ugly season. I think they could be as low as the 13 seed in the West legitimately. I think San Antonio and Houston could finish ahead of them. I think everybody I haven't named yet could finish ahead of them. And so the Clippers are stuck in no man's land with really no out because they don't have any of their picks. And so they are further than they think. I'm sure their ownership group's looking like, we got Kawhi Leonard, James Harden, good role players. We got a chance, but I'm here to tell you that that chance is extremely, extremely slim if there even is a chance at all for them. Then next on the list, we have the Golden State Warriors. Last year was a roller coaster ride for them, obviously. I mean, Draymond had multiple suspensions due to his on-the-court antics. They really struggled when he didn't play. They started off the year very poorly. Klay was inconsistent all season long. Wiggins was just, I don't know what happened to that dude after revitalizing his career when they won the finals. Reverted to a version of himself that was even way worse than what he had been in Minnesota as well. But there were some bright spots. I mean, Jonathan Kuminga had his best season. He was in the running for most improved player. Brandon Pajemski, my guy, if you know me, you know that I'm a big pods guy, was my favorite player coming out of the draft last year. But he looked like everything I thought he would be as a rookie, and looks like he could continue to get better and be the second reliable player for this team after Steph. And then they added some nice pieces, you know? I mean, D'Anthony Melton, I really like him as a third guard, a guy that can play both guard positions, really good defender, an improved three-point shooter. They added Buddy Hield as well to kind of be that Klay Thompson replacement. They got Kyle Anderson, some size and defense on the wing that they've lacked over the past couple years. Then Trayce Jackson-Davis showed some nice flashes as a rookie as well. They sold Kevon Looney. They sold Moses Moody. And then, of course, Draymond should be back and hopefully on his best behavior. So this is a weird roster because, on one hand, they're very deep. They have legitimately 10, 11 guys that I think could be like serious role rotation players for a good team. But on the other hand, they might have the worst second option in the entire conference outside of maybe San Antonio. But even San Antonio, you might take Devin Vassell over anybody else on the Warriors. But if you got Steph Curry, obviously you've got a chance to win any game. You've got a chance to be good. And when you add Draymond in the mix, and look, they played really well down the stretch last season when Draymond came back. Like, they were a top 10 team in terms of net rating in the last third of the season with these two guys. And I think Klay is an addition by subtraction, actually. I think that his whole vibe with the team was off, and he was moping around everywhere, and he to put it quite frankly, wasn't very good. He can't defend anymore, and his shooting was sporadic, and he had built up too much of a reputation in Golden State for you to kind of say, like, hey, I don't know if we're going to play you, or hey, stop taking those shots. He had earned the right to kind of just do whatever he wanted, and so it was probably a good decision for them to move on. And like I said, I like a lot of their rotation pieces, but I don't see the star power with them. It's just Steph and a bunch of guys. And it's now back-to-back seasons where we saw at the end of the year, there was a healthy Draymond Green, a healthy Steph Curry, and a healthy Klay Thompson. And they totally fell short in back-to-back years. And so I don't really know why things would be majorly different. I also am very concerned that if Steph misses any amount of time, that they are just cooked. Like, if he plays only 60 games, like, they're going to be one of the worst teams in the conference in those games he doesn't play. And so he basically has to play 70 to 75 games if they want to even have a shot at the postseason. But I like what they have to an extent. I just think that there's a clear ceiling. I kind of like their floor. I think they've got enough bodies where they're going to be really competitive and it'll be different guys playing in different games. Again, I really like Pajemski. I actually have him as my pick for most improved player this year. I think he's a significantly better fit next to Steph at this point in his career than Klay Thompson, just because of what he can do as a ball handler, a playmaker, a defender, a rebounder, does a lot more of the little things. And so I think just because of all the quality players they have that they're going to be in the play-in, and I think that they're going to win 42 to 44 games or something like that. But the problem is I don't know if that's going to be enough. And they're certainly not legitimate contenders at this point. Even if they snuck into the playoffs, they're going to get routed in round one by a much better team, a top seed in the West. And so, as I said, I think the Warriors are further than their front office probably thinks. I think they're trying to maximize what they can out of Steph, but I think they either need to move on from Steph, which I know is probably unrealistic, or try to go more all in for a big move, because riding this middle right now, it's not going to work because they are way further than you think. Next, we have the Miami Heat, and all these teams, same vibe. It's like they've made the finals a couple times. They're kind of reluctant to make moves. Like, the Clippers let Paul George go. The Warriors let Klay Thompson go. The Heat, not that they've let anyone go, but they just like haven't made a big addition at all since they added Jimmy Butler, really, despite feeling like they're close to contending. They should benefit from a full season of Terry Rozier, who they did add last year. Tyler Hero is now full-time starter on this team. Jimmy Butler, obviously, seems maybe hopefully a little bit more focused than he's been over the past couple of years with his media day appearance. I think Nikola Jovic is going to be the starting four, who definitely showed some flashes last year. And then, of course, they've got Bam down low. With their bench, they still have Josh Richardson, Duncan Robinson, Haywood Highsmith, who they re-signed, Tommy Hawkes, who is a very nice spark off the bench and starting in some scenarios last year for them as a rookie. More of a high floor, low ceiling player, but still a useful guy. Kevin Love, and then they drafted Khalil Ware as well, who has looked very good in both preseason and summer league. So I think he's going to be a really nice player and a nice sort of alternative to Bam, because they've historically not been great in the non-Bam minutes, especially when they made the finals, when they basically had to throw Cody Zeller out there, which was a bit of a mess, and then Kevin Love's not really a true center at this point. But this Miami team, and I said this after they made the finals a couple years ago, feels like they've kind of run their course. Like, I just don't see them getting over the hump. We've seen them make the finals twice now, and it just wasn't good enough. Both of those final series, one was 5, one was 6 games, but neither were really ever in doubt. Nobody thought Miami was really going to win those, and so it feels like they've kind of peaked out. And by them not making meaningful additions outside of just Terry Rozier, who to me is not really a needle mover, it feels like they've lost ground on the rest of the field in the Eastern Conference. And I also didn't love all the Jimmy Butler stuff recently. I mean, him and Pat Riley kind of publicly beefing. I mean, Riley called him out and was like, look, if you're going to talk shit, at least be out there on the court. He was due up for an extension, did not get the extension, was publicly saying that he wanted the extension, but still did not get it. So it's contract year for him. And this could maybe be the last time we see Jimmy Butler in a Heat uniform if things don't go well. And so, look, if he puts together some, like, comeback, I'm out to prove that I'm still a top 10 guy in the league, Jimmy Butler type season, then maybe this is silly and maybe they are more of a contender and they should be in a higher tier. But my point is just that, why would I think that would happen? The guy just doesn't take this regular season seriously ever. He's also very injury prone. And even if he is playing well, I still just don't think this team has enough talent to compete with the other top teams in the East. I think the top teams in the East are better than they've been the years that Miami made the finals. And so, like, Bam Adebayo, great player, phenomenal defensive anchor, a guy that is a connector offensively, can average 20 a game. But he's not really a go-to number two. We've seen him be limited in that role in the postseason in the past. Tyler Hero doesn't feel like he's improved in, like, 2 years. He's, again, a good player, was worthy of the Sixth Man of the Year when he won it a few years ago, and it can average 20 any night, but still inefficient, doesn't do anything defensively, still not much of a playmaker on the offensive end. Like, he just kind of stagnated. And then you've got a lot of other guys that are young, like Jovic, like I mentioned, Hawkes, Ware, but all those guys are low-ceiling guys. Like, Hawkes could be a really nice role player, but I'm not sure he's going to be much more. Jovic, Ware, both these guys could be really nice role players. Even if they hit as prospects, I'm still not sure that they're, like, going to be close to star players. And so they just lack star power. And so to me, Miami is further than they want to believe. I actually think Miami could be in danger of missing the postseason. I already talked about that I'm high on Atlanta. I think Atlanta could surpass them and make the playoffs over them, or at the very least, give them a good game in the play-in, which we've seen in the past be a thing. Miami lost to them in the play-in just 2 years ago, and it was in convincing fashion. And so I think Miami, if they better take this season seriously, because if they don't, then I think they could find themselves outside of the postseason, and they are certainly a lot further from contending than they would like to believe. Then lastly in this tier, we have the Sacramento Kings, and they had a pretty meaningful offseason addition in DeMar DeRozan, more so than some of the other teams in this tier, and they bring back De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis, two guys that have made All-Star games over the past couple of years, and in Sabonis' case has made multiple All-NBA teams. Keegan Murray has continued to look like a really nice young player, a 3-and-D type potential player, could do a little bit more shot creation offensively than maybe initially thought. Keon Ellis had a really nice breakout season for them this past season when Kevin Herter went down, but Kevin Herter is back. Malik Monk is also back, and he had a really, really good season last year, had a real case for Sixth Man of the Year. Might have won it if he didn't get injured down the stretch. They did recently sign Doug McDermott. They still have Trey Lyles, Alex Len. So they bring back largely the same group with DeMar DeRozan just in the Harrison Barnes spot. And I have them as further than you think, but a little bit different kind of vibe from the other teams, the Warriors, Clippers, and Heat. Warriors, Clippers, and Heat, I think all of those teams are in danger of missing the playoffs, and they've been previous contenders in the past, where the Kings, I still think the Kings can make the playoffs, but these are contender rankings, and I think they are far, far, far from contending. I just think that they are way more built for the regular season than the postseason. They've really struggled in the postseason with Sabonis as the defensive anchor, if you want to call him that. And then I really don't like the idea of a DeMar DeRozan, Domantas Sabonis, De'Aaron Fox team in the postseason, because the spacing is going to be brutal. DeMar DeRozan is still a really, really good player, and every time you want to write him off and talk about, oh, his playing style isn't conducive to today's NBA, blah, blah, like, he just goes out and balls, and he still is a really useful, good player. But the one thing you can say about him to knock him is that come postseason time, he struggled. He has really struggled, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that he can't shoot from outside, and then he's settling for tough mid-range jumpers, and that's exactly what the defense wants him to do. And so you bring him on a team with Sabonis, who's not really a floor spacer, who is a liability at times in the defensive end. De'Aaron Fox, who, while he did shoot 37% from three last season, is only a 32-33% shooter for the rest of his career, so could be an outlier season. Who knows? Maybe he did just improve that jump shot, but you know, there's still a lot of question marks about him as a shooter as well. So then you have him with DeRozan, who can't shoot outside, also Bonus, who doesn't shoot much outside. The spacing just seems like kind of a nightmare for this team. And I think they can get by offensively in the regular season because they're just going to run up and down. Sabonis is going to do his thing. DeMar DeRozan is just going to pick his spots carefully in terms of when they need him to kind of take over a little bit offensively. And look, they've all been really good regular season players, and they've been a really good regular season team over the past couple of years. So I don't doubt that they'll make the playoffs. I actually do have them as a playoff team sneaking in as the 8 seed. But as a contender, I just don't see it. I didn't see it 2 years ago when they were in the postseason, when they lost to a 6-seeded Golden State Warriors team in a demoralizing Game 7 on their home floor. I didn't see it last year when I picked them to miss the playoffs, and that's exactly what they did. And then this season, I think they can get in, but again, they are not built to contend right now. They are built to be a competitive regular season team that could win 45-ish games, but they are not built to, like, if they're playing any other team in the West, I'm going to pick them over the Kings. Like just go down the line. I mean, the Thunder, Wolves, Suns, Nuggets, Mavs, Grizzlies, Lakers, like Warriors, Pelicans, like all these teams, I'm picking them to beat Sacramento in a playoff series just because of their clear weaknesses. The things that they struggle at are the things that often get exposed in the postseason. And that's going to do it for part one of my preseason NBA contender tiers. Decided to break this up into two parts just because it was getting pretty long. But we went through the first four tiers, the bottom half of the league, 15 teams. And then in part two, we will have the remaining 15 teams and the remaining four tiers. But keep an eye out for part two dropping over the next day or two as well, definitely before the season starts next week, obviously. But with that said, thank you so much for listening, and I will chat with you soon.